Hello, we're back with News Teens Care About Episode 2. I'm Maya, I am here with Talia.
Hello.
And we're going to start off by giving you some America updates. They're not good. Yesterday, the U.S. recorded over 1,000 coronavirus deaths for the first time since May. Not good. The CDC said that the number of cases in the U.S. could be anywhere from 2 to 13 times higher than the official count, which is just, like, mind-blowing. And, like, what this makes me think of is, remember, like, in March, when it was, at least in America, it was very hard to get tested, like, very hard to get tested, and everyone was just kind of, like, everyone was like, oh, like, my mom had coronavirus in January, and I think some people's moms did have coronavirus in January, but also, like, do you remember that?
Yeah, my brother and I have actually been talking about this, how sort of in March and April, if you go outside and you walk around, you were thinking, anybody walking near me could have coronavirus. Like, at least us, we were very, very worried that literally anybody has it. And now, you know, we're thinking in all likelihood, the people around us probably don't, but we're still going to take all the precautions and act as though they do. But I think our mindset has sort of shifted to, we're not scared that any unknown person around us is infected.
Right. No, that makes sense. I mean, that was, like, I think I said this last week, is, like, it feels more and more every day like we are back in March, where that was what it was like. And we've also had some good vaccine news. A company called Pfizer and a partner company were given almost to $1.95 billion by the federal government to make 100 million vaccine doses by December, and then up to another 400 million. So that means, like, America right now has purchased, like, 500 million doses that Americans would get for free. But some interesting vaccine-related news. China has been trying to steal it. This actually was first reported a week ago. Right after we recorded, I texted you. I was like, oh my god, I wish we could have covered this. This is so interesting to me. Because why would we not just give it to them for free? Because that's, like, the right thing to do. And also, like, or they could just, like, pay us for it. This is very confusing to me. But also, lots of Americans are very skeptical of the coronavirus vaccine. Yesterday's episode of The Daily was about this. And my big takeaway was that vaccine skepticism is everywhere for a lot of different reasons. Some people believe the, like, easily debunkable vaccine cause autism line, which, like, clearly is not true. Some people just don't trust that it'll work. Some people think it'll get them sick. And some people think that because the Trump administration was able to appoint the person who's overseeing the process, that they will be putting the Trump family business interests over public health and safety. It was a great episode. And also, let's talk about The Daily for a minute. Today's episode was about schools reopening. The Daily's been great this week. Michael Barbaro has been doing a good job, excellent journalism, which is good, because last week, I don't know if you listened to last week, but it was so boring. It was just, like, the follow-up episodes from March.
Oh, yeah, I skipped all of last week, and I was boring. Really excited when it came back with both episodes this week.
Yeah. Does Canada have a vaccine? Do they want to steal ours? Do they want to buy ours? Like, what's up?
I mean, I don't think, as far as I know, I don't think Canada's planning on stealing any vaccines. I mean, there definitely are people here working on it at universities and stuff. I have no idea what the deal is with that, but I'm sure if America is the place that creates a vaccine, they will happily share it with Canada. I don't think we have to steal it.
Also, some hot off the presses news. Bibi has reportedly decided to not pass the Knesset's next budget and instead call for an election. This is number four.
Very exciting. I just read this on my Israeli society class that I took this past year at school. We have a Facebook group for alumni that my teacher runs, and he posted this, like, a couple hours ago on this Facebook group, and I was like, oh my gosh, like, I mean, of course. But so I think the deal with this is Bibi is trying to have new elections in November because his corruption trials are supposed to start in January of 2021, and he's expected to be at the trials 3 days a week, and the High Court of Justice may or may not tell him you cannot be Prime Minister if you have to be at your trial 3 days a week, so I think he's trying to avoid all of that and win the election again and build a new coalition before that happens, because that's a classic BB move.
Right. This seems to be a tactic to just, like, cause a lot of chaos and distract everyone from his trial, which is coming up. And then, you know, seize on the chaos, seize a moment to remind the Israelis that he's the only person that can keep them safe. And then we have more BB. I mean, the Israelis have more BB.
Yeah, what I'm worried about, apparently BB's approval ratings are still high right now, but I'm worried that, you know, especially because Israel is not doing well with coronavirus right now.
True, they talked about that on the Daily this morning.
They did. And, like, on the off chance that Israelis sort of wake up and see that BB is a corrupt prime minister and they don't want to vote for him again, I'm just worried that they'll shift more to the right, because I think there's no clear centrist sort of front runner after Benny Gantz sort of lost his credibility when he ruined the Kahalavan party and joined Bibi's coalition. So yeah, I personally would not love to see a Yamina or an Israel Beitenu prime minister, but I also don't want to see Bibi. It's a mess.
No, you're right. It is. But you know, we shouldn't spend forever talking about this, but I do want to push back on what you said about Israelis waking up to see how corrupt he is. Israelis are well aware of Bibi's corruption and his government's corruption. They just, like, genuinely believe that he is the only person who can keep them safe. And that's why I think that this is kind of an impossible situation when it comes to him being able to put the country through chaos like this. Is that it doesn't really matter what he does. And I mean, maybe the kind of this coronavirus response that kind of got botched partway through will influence the perception of him a little, but I just have little faith that, like, anyone will kind of, like, be awakened about his corruption and have their minds changed. Like, I don't know that we can expect that of Israelis when they have to worry about their physical safety, and, like, he has convinced them that he is the only person who will keep them safe.
You're right. If they haven't decided after this long that his corruption is a deal breaker, I don't think anything would change in the fourth election in a year and a half.
Right.
Okay. Next news story is pretty sad. On Friday night, you know, after Shabbat dinner, after our classic Friday night game of Settlers of Catan, I came upstairs and I looked at my phone and I saw the devastating news that John Lewis had died. John Lewis was truly one of the greatest American heroes, a civil rights leader. He was a huge advocate for nonviolence. For decades, he was in Congress as a representative from Georgia, from, I believe, a district that's a large part of Atlanta. And yeah, he was an amazing person. And I think he died at a really poignant time in history, because not only are we in a pandemic right now, but we're also in this moment where the Black Lives Matter movement is gaining a lot of steam and issues surrounding systemic racism are really being brought to the forefront of our conversations. And I'd like to hope that John Lewis died knowing that there were all these people who are now really passionate about carrying on his life's work in the fight against racism. And I'd like to hope he was clearly aware of systemic racism his entire life and fought against it. But I hope he felt some optimism seeing that other people were now waking up to that too. And I think it just goes to show, despite the incredible efforts that John Lewis made and the incredible things that he achieved in his life, there was so much more to be done. And his work really was the catalyst for so much change in society, but it's our duty to continue that. And yeah, I think an amazing hero, and I think we just have to continue his legacy and keep working to fight racism.
Yeah, two things that I would add are, first, that I believe it was Monday, the podcast Today Explained put out a really good episode that was a look back at some of his work. And then the other thing I would add is that I was really impacted by Obama's statement, where he wrote briefly about how not many people get to live to see the impact of their work and their legacy. But John Lewis did. And, you know, on top of that, there's so much to come. I think it's really a reminder of, like, what a visionary he was his whole life.
Yes, definitely. You talked about Today Explained. Have you listened to the kids' version of Today Explained?
Oh.
I listened to 5 minutes, like 10 seconds of it, and I'm like, what am I listening to?
Yeah, no, I don't like it. It's very odd. It honestly feels kind of like, it's like a little bit trippy.
Well, what do they call it? The Island of Explained. I was like, whose kids are listening to this?
Yeah, it feels less like it's made for kids and more like it's made for adults who are under the influence.
That's a very good point.
But overall, a good podcast. In other news. So, first up, 2 days ago, Joe Biden put out a statement about foreign interference in U.S. elections. He wrote on his Instagram and some other places on Twitter, too, about how it was a threat to U.S. democracy and our way of life. And he went over, like, the proof that Congress had that this has been an issue for a while, as well as, like, all of the ways that the Trump administration has chosen to not take action when Congress has recommended action. Here's a brief quote. He wrote, "That is why today I am putting the Kremlin and other foreign governments on notice. If elected president, I will treat foreign interference in our elections as an adversarial act that significantly affects the relationship between the United States and the interfering nation's government." He also said that he plans to report back to the public, like as president, whenever he gets more information about foreign interference. The tone of this was a reminder for me that despite Trump's messaging about America first, he has never put American values or the American way of life first, and he does not view himself as the leader or a member or the representative of Team America. For him, politics and the legislative process are only worth participating in if they make him and his family richer. Some more news. It is being reported that the U.S. has asked China to close its consulate in Houston, Texas. Marco Rubio said that this is a spy center. They have been burning documents there overnight, and like the police the fire department tried to come and put out the fires, and they were like refused at the door. And then the government is saying that this order has to do with protecting American intellectual property, which makes me think that, I don't know, maybe it could be some vaccine-related spying. I know. This then comes after about a month of the U.S. announcing different kinds of visa restrictions on members of the Chinese Communist Party. And from what I understand, a lot of these people are required to register with the party because of their jobs or their family, because it is a fairly authoritarian party. So this raises a few questions for me. We'll go through them one by one and you can answer. How generous does the U.S.
need
to... Okay. How generous does the U.S. need to be to Chinese reporters and the Chinese press when China has been very ungenerous to American reporters and has kicked them out of the country? Like, should we be putting up with having... Maybe putting up isn't the right word, but, like, if we have reason to believe that Chinese reporters are spying on us, like, should we be gracious with allowing them in even when their government kicks out U.S. reporters?
Right. I mean, if there is reason to believe that they are spying on America, I guess it is pretty logical to not be so generous with, you know, allowing them in. But I don't know that. There's lots of issues here with this whole thing. It's, like, very problematic in my mind.
I know. It is, you know, this really is just, like, how much of, like, a globalist I am. But if I were president and, like, the Chinese government was spying on us, especially to get vaccines for, like a deadly virus that, like, they need, like, that their people were affected by, too, I'd be like, come on, like, just ask. Like, why do we need to have all these secrets? Why do we need to be spying? Like, free and open press. But I do think it is interesting to think about. Because I think, like, the larger question here is, like, what pressure campaigns are effective and what pressure campaigns further erode relationships and harm ordinary people. And, like, this is something that, like, you and I are used to talking about with, like, economic pressures on Israel. But, like, this also applies here with, like, diplomatic pressures on China of, like, at what point is this less about encouraging China to behave properly and more about punishing the people of China for something they have no control over.
That's a really good point. I really hadn't thought about it like that. You're right, that's very twisted when you think about it in that way. This whole vaccine spying thing really does not click in my mind. I don't understand why I have to be spying on the vaccine in the first place, but It's a pandemic. Pandemic means it's worldwide. Just stopping it in America and just giving the vaccine to Americans is not going to solve the issue. We know that. It started in China and then it spread. Like, we know that helping one country, it does not mean it helps the entire virus.
Right, right. And then I think the next question that I have, especially as I look at, like, these visa restrictions, which were talked about in a bit more detail on today's episode of Pod Save the World, today is Wednesday the 22nd, so the 22nd episode, is party affiliation a fair way to limit entry when that party is extremely controlling of their people's lives? And I think, like, America is weird about communism in a way that it doesn't need to be because of our history with trying to, you know, get rid of all communism everywhere. And I think, like, China is an example of, like, they're, like, the communists that, like, we couldn't get to. I mean, not we, but, like, America couldn't get to. So it's just an interesting question of, like, I think that that's not a fair way to limit people coming to America. There needs to be a better, more, like, thorough way of understanding why someone wants to come to America.
I agree. And if you're just limiting people based on party affiliation, like, where and how do you draw the line? And if you start drawing those lines, who's to say they don't become more and more extreme? And how do you, again, like, especially if it's a communist party, how do you know that somebody's party affiliation is genuine and that they haven't been forced or coerced to say things or do things by authoritarian governments? It's just, yeah, it's not great.
Yeah, they're hard questions to answer.
Okay, moving on to the fun Trump interview when Chris Wallace interviewed him, I believe, this past weekend. it's a really fun interview. Chris Wallace was actually doing, like, a pretty remarkable job of pushing back at the things Trump said and fact-checking him when Trump was just spewing lies. You know, despite all that, Trump still went on to say, like, incredibly disturbing things. Who's surprised, though, at this point? So here are some highlights from this interview. So Trump's new thing to justify the huge surge in COVID cases in the U.S. seems to me that he's just, you know, praising America's testing. That's his justification somehow. He's saying that, you know, we only have so many cases in the U.S. because we're testing so much. But that doesn't make sense. A, there are many other countries that are testing more than the U.S. and they have far fewer cases. Because testing doesn't create new cases, it identifies them. And the fact of the matter is, there are so many cases in the U.S. right now that need to be identified. So there are many that haven't even been identified if they haven't been tested. The sheer fact that they are testing more people does not equate to more people having the virus. That just doesn't make sense. And he's just blaming this whole situation on the testing. That's not solving the problem. Like, I agree, we need to encourage people to get tested, especially if they have symptoms. But the more important thing here is to encourage people to wear masks, which Trump has not been doing. You know, social distancing, washing their hands, all of that. That's my dog barking.
Yeah, I did hear latte.
Trump was also, you know, saying just blatantly false things about Biden. He was going on and on about, you know, Joe Biden wants to defund and abolish the police. And Wallace immediately refuted that because that's just not what Joe Biden has been saying. He has a pretty moderate stance on those things, and he has never said he wants to abolish the police.
Yeah, you know, far too moderate for much of his constituency.
Exactly. Trump also said, and I quote, many whites are also being killed, when talking about, I believe, the protests and systemic racism and police brutality. I don't remember exactly in relation to what he was saying that, but his head is just so clearly in the clouds. He does not understand the issues on the ground. And honestly, that quote is vaguely reminiscent to me of his very fine people on both sides in Charlottesville quote. And he cannot seem to condemn white supremacy. I wonder why that is. he can't condemn things that are seriously problematic in the country. And I think that's very telling. He also defended Confederate flags. We love to hear that. He's like, oh, and then he goes, I don't understand my kids are learning about the 1619 project in schools. I don't even understand what that represents. And then Chris Wallace goes, slavery. And then he goes, and Trump goes, well, that's what they're saying, but they don't even know.
I just want to interject here and say, as someone who thought that the 1619 Project was a really interesting work of art and exploration of American history, I've always been perplexed by the conservative obsession with it. I mean, I learned a lot of new perspectives, and I think it can be uncomfortable to have your understanding of history change so much, but, like, I thought the project, and especially the podcast, which was excellent, was, like, very patriotic and, like, gave me a new, especially the podcast episode about music and, like, the history of minstrel shows, just, like, gave me a new, a new understanding of, like, where the American culture that we love came from. I just think it's funny that people get very fixated on the 1619 Project without, like, an understanding of, like, what it was trying to accomplish. Anyway, back to the interview.
Yeah, very true. Trump also went on and on about how fake polls are and how the polls that are saying that Biden's in the lead are just fake. But then he also goes, but I have polls that show that I'm winning in every swing state. I don't understand. Like, his train of thought here just makes no sense to me. And another great thing, he talks about how he aced this cognition test and how it was so hard that even Chris Wallace would get half the questions wrong. And I'm, first of all, very suspicious how he could ace any test, considering that he's so delusional. And, yeah, I am just honestly at a loss for words.
No, it was very odd, but not surprising to watch. Some things I'd like to point out. See, I'm looking at this episode outline right now, and you said that Chris Wallace was fact-checking him in a remarkable way. And, like, the fact that, like, it's remarkable to just kind of, like, be honest with the president about, like, what's true and what's not really says something about, like, the media environment that he's in. Last night, Trump did, he did another, like, press briefing. He talked for, like, one sentence about how things in America are going to get worse before they get better and how we all need to be wearing masks, which is the kind of presidential leadership that we have needed for the past 4 months, 5 months. So that's great to see, and I hope that he can stick with this. And then I watch videos like this interview, and I think, like, does he even want to be president again saying things like this? It doesn't seem like he does. I also think it's funny that his primary attack with Joe Biden is that Biden is senile and can't string together a sentence. And I think, first of all, like, it is untrue. You know, Joe Biden's greatest talent is not giving speeches, but he is very put together, clearly very smart and competent. And secondly, even those edited videos that seem to show Joe Biden rambling make more sense than complete sentences unedited that Trump attempts to say. And I mean, I'm never really sure where I stand on, like, how much talking about health we should be doing for presidents, but I do know that, like, if your primary attack of Joe Biden is that he is senile or has early onset dementia, it's not an effective comparison to Trump, because Trump is incredibly unhinged, and more so than he was 4 years ago, and more than he was 10 years ago.
Trump is far worse than Biden in that respect, I think.
Right. And this brings me to an offer I would like to make to all my listeners. If you are someone who has decided not to vote for Donald Trump, but you also feel that you are, to use words I hear often, unable to vote for Joe Biden because of any perceived issues with his age, his health, his policies, or this perception that he is, like, just as bad as Trump, or, like, the Democrats' version of Trump, I invite you all to send me a text or a DM or call me, and we will find a time to talk about some of Biden's proposed policies and how they will impact you. We can talk about his environmental protections, his childcare policies, especially the ones he announced a couple days ago, his Israel policy, his tax policy, or anything else that interests or concerns you. You know, I get that a year ago we had a really exciting group of candidates running for the nomination, and it can feel really disappointing to end up with a nominee who doesn't feel exciting. I mean, all my friends listening, like, you know how many, and Talia, you especially, like, you know how many candidates I was really captivated by. I know how many really connected with you, and it's disappointing to end up with a nominee who doesn't feel exciting when we had such an incredible group a year ago. But that feeling of being let down is being weaponized against us and is being used to spread lies about Joe Biden and the kind of person he is and the kind of administration he will run. And, like, what I always say to my friends who talk to me about this is, like, be careful about whose narrative you're believing, because, like, when you talk about Joe Biden being senile, like, even if you don't use the word, like, the phrase, like, Sleepy Joe, like, that's what you're talking about. You are saying exactly what Trump wants you to believe. And I think especially if you live in, just to list out some important battleground states that I know I have listeners from, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Minnesota, we have the opportunity to decide what the next chapter of the American story will look like. And we need to make sure that we are making that decision with clear, trustworthy information. So text me. I'd love to talk to you all about this.
Yes, please text Maya. You can text me too, but I don't think most of you know me. So
you're all getting to know Talia. And I mean, I could talk about this for a long time because it really does get me heated. But I think, like, something else that I've been thinking about a lot, especially as the, like, unity groups between the Sanders campaign and the Biden campaign have been releasing their recommendations recently, I've been thinking a lot about how Joe Biden is not the person, he's the last person I thought would be the nominee when he announced he was running for president. He seemed very hesitant to run for president, which I think you can view as a pro and a con, but I just do think that there is something very true about the fact that, like, right now, there's not someone who is going to appear out of nowhere and save us from the incompetence that Trump has brought to the White House. Like, this is going to be a really hard process where, like, a lot of different kinds of people who believe a lot of different kinds of things are all going to need to say, you know, this is someone who we trust to listen to us. And I think, like, Biden has proven again and again that, like, that is something he is willing to do, is he is willing to listen to everyone. And I hope that we can all understand that and how it impacts us.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what is really great about Biden, is that he is willing to listen to the other members of his party, to listen to the citizens of the country, and to make changes based off of that. And he's not so stuck in his ways. And he's really, like, a man of, this is going to sound really stupid, like, a man of his party, just a man of the country, and he just wants to do what's best, and he's willing to change in order to do that. So.
Right, like, I touched on this earlier, and I think that, like, Biden is someone who does see himself as, like, the representative of Team America, which feels really needed. I don't want to be battling with my government. I want to be able to, like, feel like I can communicate with my government, and that, like, my representative shouldn't have to be, like, battling with the government. He should be able to communicate with the government about things that affect me.
Yeah, so anyone listening, if you are not, especially if you're not planning on voting in this upcoming election, just for me, vote for Biden. I can't vote because I am not American, so just vote for me.
Yeah.
Like, don't vote for me. Vote in on my behalf.
Right in Talia Levitt. Right in Talia Levitt. Next up, we have some Bachelorette filming updates. I'm still going over the men and trying to figure out, like, exactly who I think is going to be in the top few, but the producers appear to have sent a contestant who tested positive home. I need to find this guy's name. So what they did is they brought everyone to this hotel in, I think, like, Palm Springs. And then they quarantined them and they tested them there. But then, wait, I need to find this guy's name. So they appear to have brought everyone. Okay. Alex Brusiloff, he posted a picture of him leaving the hotel, like, in a car. And he, like, wrote on it, COVID-2, Alex-0. And then he posted another picture of him on a plane with his mask down. This is a man who, from what we understand, was sent home by the producers on an airplane with everyone else because he tested positive for coronavirus.
How was he able to get on the airplane if he had not tested negative since?
Talia, if you're in America, you can do whatever you want. You can get on a plane if you have coronavirus.
Oy vey.
I think that right now it looks like the producers put him on a plane after he tested positive.
Oh my God.
I know.
And that's why I'm happy I'm flying directly from Toronto to Israel.
Yeah, so that's your Bachelorette update. Talia, tell us about some media you've been consuming lately. What are your recommendations?
Oh, I've listened to some great podcasts this week. Very excited to recommend some. So first of all, the most recent episode of The Ezra Klein Show with Bryan Stevenson. Great episode. Highly recommend listening to it. Me and my brother were talking yesterday about how The Ezra Klein Show just keeps getting better and better. He has some really great interviews.
Why do you never call me when you're talking about these things? Because I think this too.
I'm sorry.
I don't want to be hanging out with the Levitts, but I'm stuck in America.
But the Bryan Stevenson episode, great. Also, I did tell Maya about this one. The most recent episode of The Weeds, all about anti-Semitism and conspiracy theories.
I would
just
like to say, Talia, you told me you were like, you should listen to this. I'm listening to it right now. And I said, I already did.
Okay.
Like, this is not a competition about who can listen to Vox Media Network podcasts faster, but I do think it's me. Anyway, okay. Sorry, keep you going.
And then we already talked about The Daily, but they've been very good this week. Things that are not podcasts. I got through a lot of my Netflix list this weekend. I watched Becoming, the Michelle Obama movie, which I'd been meaning to watch for a very long time since it came out a few months ago. I never got around to it. I read the book, like, when it came out, I don't know, 2 years ago. It was very good. Very good movie also. I watched the Ben Platt live Netflix special. Wonderful. 10 out of 10 recommend. I also watched 13 Going on 30 the other night. I forgot how good it was. Quality movie. And then overall, I'm just, these days, really embracing my inner old lady, I've realized. I think last Friday, I spent the entire day baking and knitting, or attempting to knit, at least. I'm not doing very well. I get so excited every Saturday morning because that's when the crossword puzzle and the Sudoku comes on the newspaper that we get. I'm really living the old lady life this summer.
I love that for you.
Thank you.
I don't remember. Do you do the New York Times crosswords, like the app?
Oh, yeah, we have the subscription, but it's a race because my mom usually gets to it first because I think
right,
she does it the night
before. You have
before.
The family subscription, and then
yeah.
You can, oh, it's so frustrating. My dad and I have this. It's so frustrating.
I never get it because I think it comes out at like 11 p.m. the night before. My mom always does it immediately. If not, my brother usually gets to it before me. I can never do it.
Oh, no, that's rough. That happens. Just to clarify, what happens is if you have family sharing, you can share your purchases, but for some reason you can't make like separate profiles in the New York Times crossword puzzle app. So like if my dad does a crossword on his phone, like it'll be filled in on mine. So like it just makes it hard with like the daily mini. But we should do a daily mini competition. I mean, that might be hard given your family competing over it.
Yeah.
But that'd be fun. You gave a lot of really good recommendations, a lot of things that I listened to. I also watched the Becoming documentary, which was really excellent. So I'll give a few more recommendations. As far as podcasts go, I've been listening to Slow Burn Season 4, which is about David Duke. I really like all of Slow Burn. It's the first two seasons were about the impeachments of Nixon and Clinton. The third season was about the assassinations of Tupac and the Notorious B.I.G., and then this season is about David Duke. Really, really interesting. So I loved those. I also, Pod Save America, over the past, like, month, did a special series called That's the Ticket, which I think we talked about last week. Was just really interesting. Just three episodes. I really love Switched on Pop, which is, I think that's another Vox Media Network, isn't it? Yeah, I think it is. Wow, we love Vox over here. And that is, like, breaking down pop music. And while we're talking about it, I'll recommend the 1619 podcast, especially the episode about, like, the legacy of minstrel shows. I've watched very little new TV over the past few months, but I have been rewatching Season 3 of The Mindy Project over and over, and it just gets better and better each time. Also, of course, I have to recommend my friend and friend of the pod, Drew Scott's blog, Shekel for Your Thoughts. I don't know, Google it. Also, a book recommendation. I recently read Heartland, which is a memoir from writer and professor Sarah Smarsh, and it tells her family's story of, I think, like, the, like, subtitle is Working Hard and Growing Up Poor in Kansas. It's, like, framed as a letter to, like, the theoretical daughter that she chose to never have. And it's a really beautiful and sad story about parts of America that we often ignore. If you live near me and want to read it, I'll drop it off at your house gladly because it's just that good.
Oh, I love a new book recommendation. Maybe I'll buy that on my Kindle.
You should.
Yeah, I'm almost done my book that I started yesterday. I've been reading a lot of, like, really heavy books, and I just needed, like, a light, like, romance, like, young adult novel. So that's what I've been reading now. It's, like, a really good change of pace.
But. Yeah. Talia, what news are you disturbed by?
Oh, God. So first of all, the federal agents that are showing up in Portland, sent by the Department of Homeland Security, they're coming to the Black Lives Matter and the police reform and defunding protests in, like, unidentified camouflage uniforms, and they're taking these protesters into these unmarked vehicles and detaining them. They're firing tear gas. It's just so scary, and frankly, it seems pretty Orwellian to me, and I just... Like, what has America come to that these unidentified federal agents are coming to mostly peaceful protests? And I just, it's truly disturbing and awful. Yeah, any thoughts?
Yeah, it is incredibly disturbing. These are troops, essentially, who were deployed to protect federal property. And it's interesting to, like, see the scenes of them guarding buildings. My mom is from Portland, and I'm interested. I have to talk to her about, like, what it looks like to see these people in, like, full... These are essentially SWAT teams, like, in riot gear, you know, standing in front of, like, the courthouse, the library, certain statues. It is... And, I mean, he's threatened to send them, actually, to Detroit a couple days ago, which our governor gave a big no thank you to. It is really disturbing. It's really... You know, like, this is kidnapping, like, pulling people into these cars. Like, people did not know that they were being put into a government car. They thought they were literally, you know, there have been a lot of, like, far-right, like, white supremacist, like, counter-protesters threatening violence at these peaceful demonstrations. So, like, people have been thinking that they were being kidnapped by white supremacists.
Yeah, it's terrifying, truly. Another terrifying thing is, and I've recently learned how to pronounce this word. If I'm pronouncing it wrong, I sincerely apologize. The Uyghur Muslims in China, who are literally being tortured and imprisoned and put in, honestly, concentration camps. There are videos of them being blindfolded, handcuffed. Their heads have been shaved. It's really awful. And I'm honestly, like, very disappointed in myself and very distraught that I had no idea this was going on until recently when I think a new video was leaked or something came out and people sort of started talking about this a little bit more again. I'm really disturbed by the fact that I did not know that this was going on, and it's been going on for years, and it's over a million of these people in China who are really being tortured, and it's awful.
Yeah, this is, again, one of the most disturbing things I've heard recently, and you know, this disturbing news combined with your previous piece of disturbing news is just a reminder that, like, authoritarianism is a problem everywhere, and, like, it's unacceptable. Thank you for sharing those. I'm really disturbed by the news about huge ice melts in the Arctic Ocean, which have been caused by a heat wave in Siberia. And it was a reminder that, first of all, we all need to be making changes to our carbon footprints, and that the government needs to be imposing regulations on massive corporations so that they can be responsible for their carbon footprint. Text me about Biden's plan to do that. But especially I've been thinking about this a lot as I get closer and closer to leaving for school, where all dining halls are going to be takeout only. So, like, my family does not use plastic waste. Like, we really never drink plastic water bottles. We have some now because when we have people over at our house to, like, sit outside in the backyard, we give them single-use water bottles, but, like, we use, like, silicone bags, like, the whole thing. So, like, my plastic waste is about to skyrocket, and, you know, I don't feel the impact of it. Like, I don't live near an ocean. that's flooding. I don't live near dumps, but, like, we all need to be aware of this. It is scary.
That's a very good point that, I mean, obviously college food is just one example of, I'm sure there's lots of increases in amounts of waste because of the pandemic. And, yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
That is our show for today. We'll be back next week.
Yeah. Subscribe, rate, review, tell your friends. Did I get it all in?
Yeah, text me. Bye, guys.
Bye.